Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we are live in Los Angeles on iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Greg Cosell, 1 hour from now, NFL Meat Sandwich. Joy Taylor is joining me as we... Today we're packed. Tonight is the beginning of a bunch of good Week 3 NFL preseason games. Starters will play tonight. It's a cross-your-fingers night. Nobody gets hurt night.
But it really now, feels like the official start of football tonight.
The official start of the NFL season is tonight, where starters play. Some guys like Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield may play into the second half over the next 3 or 4 days. Veteran players, obviously, in New England, they want to know who's going to be the backup, not Tom Brady. Aaron Rodgers, it looks like, will play. I'm going to give you two headlines today. I'll start with the first one. They both sound controversial, and they're both regarding iconic first-ballot Hall of Fame talents. Here is the first controversial headline. Packers must make drafting quarterback a high priority. It was in USA Today. Whoa! Clickbait! Fake news! No, not at all. I don't understand, and I've watched the NFL draft my entire adult life. I don't get why teams don't draft a quarterback every year or every other year. It doesn't matter if you have Patrick Mahomes. It doesn't matter if you have Jameis Winston or you have somebody in the middle of the pack, Dak Prescott or Cam Newton. It's the only position in the NFL that you can draft it, and if you've got a great player at quarterback, you don't even have to play him, and he can have increased value. You draft somebody behind Aaron Rodgers. He learns from Aaron Rodgers, just like Aaron learned from Brett Favre. And 2 years later, you can move the pick for where you drafted. Jimmy Garoppolo was more valuable having sat behind Tom Brady and gotten hurt than he was out of college. New England has drafted 10 quarterbacks since they first won a Super Bowl. Fourth round, third round, third round, second round, third round, fourth round. Good draft picks. And they've been able to trade those picks and get equal or higher value for them. This sounds like a controversial headline. Of course Green Bay should draft quarterbacks every year. They've drafted two since Aaron Rodgers started. And every time he twists an ankle, it's man overboard in Green Bay. So if you have a great quarterback, Big Ben, Mahomes, Luck, you draft the quarterback, third or fourth round, because your first couple of rounds are where you get your stars and where you plug your holes. This is a league that has viable free agency. You plug your holes with free agency in the first 2 rounds of the draft. By round three, 35% of the players are busts. They're whiffs. They can't play. So if you have a great quarterback, you draft him, let him learn your system, and move them as you get the next guy for equal value. If you have one of those really, really... Haven't we seen enough quarterbacks? You know, Andy Dalton, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. I'd argue Cam Newton. Some would argue Kirk Cousins. You obviously draft a quarterback because they're not taking you to a special place. And if you have a bad quarterback situation, of course you draft him. The NFL draft is fascinating. Is that there's all sorts of tricks to it. It has changed. The most important position in football is the quarterback position. Look at what we draft now at quarterback and what we used to draft. Like, I don't get this. The league has become solely, overwhelmingly about what position? Quarterback. I would draft it every year. I don't care if I have Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to bring in Patrick Mahomes. I'm going to draft a third-round pick to a fourth-round pick every year in Kansas City. I'm going to take that quarterback. He's going to learn from Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. And, A, he's a safeguard in case Patrick gets hurt. And, B, if he's not, I can trade that pick in 3 years and get equal value. So it's not a bust pick. It's just something I don't get about the draft. by the way, most young quarterbacks I really like. Carson Wentz, injuries. Deshaun Watson, injuries. I mean, a lot of these guys that I like, Carson Wentz, Andrew Luck, Deshaun Watson, I got injury concerns. I think that sounds like a controversial headline, and it's an obvious headline. Of course Green Bay should draft a quarterback. They don't have a ton of holes to fill on this roster. They needed a center, a safety, and a tight end. They went and drafted all those positions. They should take a second, third-round pick, learn from Aaron, sit behind Aaron. Maybe he's the next Aaron. If not, trade him for equal value 2-3 years later. Here's the second headline, which sounds controversial. Adam Schefter acknowledges this could be the last season for Tom Brady. Whoa, clickbait, fake news, trying to get attention. No, let's listen to Adam Schefter's thoughts on this.
People forget that people have lives and they have families. And sometimes, you know, you want to do what's best for your wife or your kids. And Tom is 42 now. And I'm sure that his family has sacrificed plenty for him to do what he's done and to be as dedicated as he is to his job, to do it at the level he has. So, again, if it's me just looking at it from the outside, I'm just reading the signs, right? His home is for sale. He's on a contract that voids. It's just saying that this has the potential, one way or another, for this to be his last season in New England.
Of course it does, and it's really happening soon, and it's going to change the National Football League dramatically. Listen, if you look at the greatest quarterbacks of all time, there are no exceptions here. They all had great coaches. There is no great quarterback who had a stiff as a coach. Bradshaw had Chuck Knoll. Okay, Montana had Walsh. Fouts had Air Coryell. Aikman had Jimmy Johnson. Tom Brady has Belichick. Marino had Shula. Elway had Shanahan. There is no, God, he was a great quarterback. Roger Staubach had Tom Landry. Okay, so Belichick and Brady, I don't give a rip who gets the credit. They are the league's pattern. Brady can play poorly, Rams Super Bowl, and Belichick beats you. He completely works Sean McVay. Or it's not Belichick's best game plan, Philadelphia, but Brady throws for 500 yards. You have to have both. And what's clear in the NFL, this is not a controversial headline. This is going to happen soon, and it is going to open the door for Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes. I think there are five quarterback head coaching combos that have a chance, and I think Reid and Mahomes feels like over the next 10 to 12 years, they'll have the greatest opportunity to be in the Walsh, Montana, Aikman, Jimmy, Bradshaw, Knoll, Brady, Belichick, Elway, Shanahan model. I think, though, for me, Mahomes and Andy Reid is it. I'm going to get a great coach, a great quarterback, a great GM. I'm going to get stability from the franchise. They draft well. They have dysfunction in their division. Currently, Oakland. And in 2 years, I think the Chargers, Denver, and Oakland could all have new quarterbacks. If I had to rate them right now, because the league has no exceptions, you find an all-time great quarterback who wins Super Bowls or gets close, they all have great coaches. I'd go Mahomes, Reid, number one. If you told me next 12 years, who's the next quarterback coach dynasty? I'd go Reid, Mahomes, one. Goff, McVay, two. Wentz, Peterson, three. Luck, Wright, four. And Wilson, Pete Carroll, five. Now, Pete's getting up there. I don't think Pete has probably 4 years to coach, maybe five. That's why I put them fifth. I can't put Garoppolo, Kyle Shanahan, because I have questions about Garoppolo's health. And frankly, how good is he? I think he's good. I don't know. But what Schefter is saying, this is not even, it's close. And when Tom leaves, it is going to open the door wide open. And we have four or five coach quarterback combos, which in my opinion, as long as the quarterback can stay healthy, Wentz, Luck, we have a chance to see a next dynasty here. And I think Reid and Mahomes feels like 12 years, five Super Bowls. Not saying they'll win all of them. They'll get to half of them. It's what it feels like to me.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So the ratings are in for HBO's Hard Knocks, and Pittsburgh is watching more than any city in America per capita. The ratings have tripled in Pittsburgh for Hard Knocks. And so they've been fantastic. And AB went to Twitter yesterday and said, tweet, my ex still thinks of me. Well, of course she does. Watching your ex implode on Facebook is a hoot. It's absolutely validating. Pittsburgh's a stable organization. They don't have a lot of dumpster fires. So to watch one of their stars go to Oakland and be a tire fire on the side of the road is absolutely captivating. Listen, when LeBron left Cleveland and went to Miami, you know the second highest ratings every year in the NBA for the finals? It was Cleveland. If Tom Brady left New England, you don't think Boston would watch him if he went and played for the Chargers or the Miami Dolphins? Of course they would. But I think narcissism's a hell of a drug. I think AB thinks they're, AB thinks they miss me. I think the Steelers are like, oh my God, what a mess. I think they're laughing at him. Listen, we have a history. Fans see this. Production leaves, team's in trouble. We have a history at this position. Ocho Cinco left, Bengals got better. Marvin Harrison left, Colts won more games. Randy Moss left, Patriots went 14-2. T.O. left three times. Three different teams got better. Dez Bryant left Cowboys. Cowboys got better. I think the New York Giants, and this is not a shot at OBJ, will win more games this year without OBJ. Star receivers are demanding. Of the 16 interceptions Big Ben threw last year, 10 were targeting Antonio Brown. Star receivers that are verbal and noisy create an environment offensively where you do feel like I've got to feed him the ball, sometimes to your detriment. I think Pittsburgh, I think fans are underestimating Pittsburgh. I think Vegas is underestimating Pittsburgh. I think the media is underestimating Pittsburgh. Their over-under, that's called a future bet in Vegas, is 9. I think it's one of the best bets on the board in Vegas. Steelers over 9. And I'm generally a believer, take the under on over-unders. I almost always bet. Fans tend to feel their teams are better. I am, general rule, bet the under in Vegas. Pittsburgh's bet the over. I don't think people understand how motivated Big Ben is. I don't think they understand how motivated Juju Smith-Schuster and James Washington are. I think if you look at Pittsburgh, look at their last 6 games. They will have the best quarterback and the best offensive line in 6 of their last 6 games. At Cincy, hosting Cleveland, at Arizona, Buffalo, at the Jets, and at the Ravens. They will have the best quarterback and the best O-line and the most experienced coach in every one of those games. That feels like 5-1 to me. So, yes, of course Pittsburgh is watching Hard Knocks. Everybody goes to Facebook after the breakup, and it's wildly entertaining when the ex is imploding. And AB, to some degree, with Oakland until yesterday, felt like he was imploding. But I don't think they miss their ex. I think they're laughing at their ex.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Cam Newton's at New England in week 3, so that's a real game. Cam's going to be playing. Cam's in a very interesting spot. This is really funny. He only makes $22 million a year. Now, right. Again, let's put it in context, a lot of money. Patrick Mahomes is going to sign probably a $38 million a year contract in the next year. Cam's at 22, and I don't think he gets another contract. First of all, the analytics are in. This has become a very much a precision throwing league, and he's not a precision throwing quarterback. I've compared him to Russell Westbrook. The game changed. Russell Westbrook, you have to be able to shoot threes. John Wall can't and Russell Westbrook can't. Sometimes the game moves away from you. It's moved away from Cam. The big strong arm guy that's not precise, that's not what the league is anymore. And there's always been this whole thing. Cam doesn't have any support. 5 top 10 defenses in 8 years. 3 different Pro Bowl offensive linemen. Way better than average running backs. And Greg Olsen will get Hall of Fame votes. Makes it in? I'm not sure. It's not that. He's had stability in coaching. Ron Rivera is one of the top defensive coaches in the NFL. Again, he's had five top 10 defenses in 8 years. 65% of the time he gets a top 10 defense. So I don't think Cam gets another deal. David Tepper's the new owner. So David Tepper, A, has been with the stable, high-standard Steelers. He's not going to Carolina and going to be happy with a guy finishing third. This is a guy whose first press conference, the only thing he cared about. Remember that? Here's the only thing the new owner cares about.
If I'm moving someplace and we're doing this in Carolina, the first thing I care about is winning. The second thing I care about is winning. And the third thing I care about is you guys are smart. So that's on and off the field. That includes the charity aspect, community aspect, and how you make a community better.
Okay.
So you win a lot of ways, and I don't like to lose it anyway.
Yeah, Cam doesn't win enough. Well, he was MVP in 2015. This owner wasn't here. This owner was not here. He doesn't care about the rearview mirror crap with Cam. Westbrook was the MVP in 2016. Houston doesn't care now. That's for Oklahoma City and their fans and their arena and their memories. Houston doesn't care about Westbrook's MVP. This new owner doesn't care about Cam's MVP. That's somebody else's plaque. That's not his plaque. So Cam's making 22. That's it. I'm very interested to see if he gets another contract because he's got 2 years left. And the division is full of good teams. Saints, Atlanta, Bruce Arians now with Jameis Winston. It's full of a lot of good teams. All right, here we go. Greg Cosell joins us. Started 3 weeks ago. We're going to have him all the way until February. We bring him on at the top of the 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern hour on Thursdays. So we're going to talk about the AFC South today and the NFC South. Let's start with the AFC South. We just had Mark Schlereth on. Mark said, I think Deshaun Watson and Bill O'Brien are going to be a very special combination. You know, there is this theory, Greg, that Bill O'Brien's kind of a middling coach, but he did win the division again last year. They've never had what you consider a great GM. When you look at Deshaun Watson, Bill O'Brien, what does the film say? Do you think it's elite coaching, elite playing?
Well, the issue for that team, and it's what Bill O'Brien had to try to do last year, was compensate for and camouflage for poor offensive line play. And there's multiple ways to do that, but one way, and it showed up on the tape, is they used a lot of seven-man pass protection concepts, Colin, and that's great to protect your quarterback, and that's certainly number one, but then you only have three receivers that are going out into routes. So it's just a numbers game. The more eligible receivers you remove from routes into protection, the less multiple your pass game can be. So they're likely to start two rookies on the offensive line this year at the two guard positions. So that's still a work in progress. I really like Deshaun Watson. I spent a lot of time this summer studying him from last year, and when I watched him, you know, day after day for a number of days, he's a really impressive kid, really loose-limbed athlete, an easy thrower, can make every throw, can make plays outside of structure. I really like the player, but their O-line will be a work in progress.
Andrew Luck, we don't know what it is. They talk about a calf injury. Calf injuries heal. And frankly, calf injuries heal pretty quickly. He hasn't had a practice since April, a legitimate practice. Is this roster now good enough to win some games with Jacoby Brissett? What do you make of the old line is clearly headed in the right direction. If Luck didn't play for a while, how good is their personnel?
I think it's solid. I think there's a drop-off. I like Jacoby Brissett as a player, but I think there's a drop-off, clearly. I think they would have to rely more on the run game, and I think then that puts a little more of an onus on Marlon Mack, who I think is a nice back. The question is, how much of a burden can he carry on a weekly basis? Their defense is clearly better.
Yeah.
I think that has to become a bigger factor for them. You know, I think Justin Houston, adding him, is a real positive because they need that pass rush pressure. They've got a player that not many people know about named Kenny Moore, who's a corner, and when he plays in the slot in their nickel, he's really, really good, one of the best in the league. But I think that there would be a meaningful drop-off without Luck at quarterback.
Okay, one of the teams in the league, and I just don't quite understand this, Tennessee, in a league where it's hard to have a winning record, has gone 9-7, 9-7, 9-7. And that's with Mariota being hurt a lot. Vrabel appears to be able to coach. They have a good offensive line. They added Humphreys, Adam Humphreys. Delanie Walker comes back. Corey Davis has talent. I think Tennessee, I think they're pretty good here. It's kind of one of those dark horse teams that if they ended up with 11 wins, I'd be like, all right, good old line, ran for over 2,000 yards, nice pieces in free agency. What do you make of Tennessee when you watch them on film? They clobbered Dallas last year. They clobbered New England last year. There is a physical component to this team I like.
Without question. They're a little bit old school, which I think Mike Vrabel preaches. They have a very good defense. Dean Pease is their defensive coordinator. He's outstanding. They're very multiple defensively. They've got a very good secondary. I think they're going to try to be a run-first team that starts with Derrick Henry and have Marcus Mariota work off that. I think they've got some weapons. I think Corey Davis is a really good player.
Yes.
And I'm anxious to see if he can continue to put up numbers in the context of their offense. This is not profound, but I think much will depend on Mariota's consistency. He's very good given weeks. You mentioned two big wins they had against quality teams, but there's an inconsistency to his play. His mechanics are the reason for that. So we'll see if he can become a more consistent player. But there's a lot of pieces in place for them to be a very solid, old-school kind of team.
All right, time for a hot take. Nick Foles is going to go to Jacksonville, and they're going to finish 6-10. And he's not better than Carson Wentz. That's my takeaway on Nick Foles in Jacksonville. Your thoughts?
Well, that's not a real big takeaway there, Colin. I mean, that's like saying 2 and 2 is 4.
Okay.
I think Nick Foles is a real solid quality NFL quarterback. He's not an elite player. I think he needs the system to help him be a quality player. We'll see what their run game looks like. I think Leonard Fournette is a question mark at this moment in time, but I think they need him to be a factor. They still have very good defensive players, so it's very possible that their defense could still be very, very good, which I think they need to be the case. But I think Nick Foles is a complimentary player in an offense and a team that has a chance to be good.
Let's go now to the NFC South. Breeze and the Saints, very quietly, they have put together what I consider to be an excellent offensive line, which is a little bit of the secret sauce to this organization. Personnel-wise on the defensive side, Breeze has age. When you just look at their – we know they're well-schemed with Sean Payton.
Yeah.
Do you like their overall personnel?
Yeah, I do, and I really like Dennis Allen as a defensive coordinator. I watched a lot of their defense this summer, and I think when you look at that defense, you see a lot of moving parts, a lot of multiple fronts, a lot of pressure packages. They do a lot of man pressures because they're a very good man-to-man defense, and Dennis Allen likes to play that way, and so that increases your options when it comes to pressure. So I think that there are it's an overlooked defense because of Sean Payton and Drew Brees, but I think their defense is pretty darn good.
We forgot about Atlanta, but they had cluster injuries in the secondary. Matt Ryan put up terrific numbers last
year. Did.
They have stability at coach. They have an excellent GM. They did draft and address their offensive line. If there was a dark horse team in the NFC, I think I'd probably go with Atlanta. What say you?
Yeah, I think that's fair. Obviously they feel that with Chris Lindstrom, who'll start at right guard, they'd like McGarry to start at right tackle. I think they're basically telling you that we're going to get back a bit to that zone run game and with Devonta Freeman, who's a good back. I think defensively they're interesting because I think Dan Quinn has made a decision based on today's NFL that you need to be more multiple than playing a lot of cover three. And I think you're going to see more pressure concepts from them. I think they're going to be more aggressive defensively. So I think this team's going to look a little different on the defensive side of the ball. But you mentioned Matt Ryan, another guy who's overlooked even though he's been in a Super Bowl. He had a really, really good year.
Yes.
Some said it was the best year that a quarterback's ever had on a team. That what they were 6-10, I believe.
Yeah.
He's just a really solid NFL quarterback.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. Now, a quarterback that gets lauded often that I struggle with is Cam Newton. Listen, he's had 5 of his 8 years, he's had a top 10 defense. They've had 3 offensive linemen during his tenure make the Pro Bowl, above average at running back. Greg Olsen will get Hall of Fame votes. He's got 2 years left in a contract. I think the word is out on Cam. I think in a precision league, he's not a precision thrower. I always tend to like Carolina's defense and personnel. I struggle with their inconsistency with Cam. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been an inconsistent passer. I think the thing with Cam, as you well know, is the fact that he's a big, big man with great running ability, and he gives you that element, which makes him at times difficult to defend. But I don't think anybody would argue with the fact that he's a scattershot thrower who misses throws at times, but is certainly capable of great throws. But there's an absolute inconsistency and erratic nature to his game. The question is defensively, you know, can they be really good? You know, they're counting on Dante Jackson, the second-year corner, to become a really good player. I think McCaffrey is a really good player and will obviously be used in the pass game quite a bit. Then they've got young receivers who, in their mind, are ready to become good players. So, you know, I don't think there's a mystery about Cam Newton at this point in his career. We kind of know what he is.
Yeah. Finally, Tampa Bay. If I had to say, all right, make a bet. Jameis Winston's going to improve with Bruce Arians, or we're at the end of the line here, judgment, immaturity, too many picks. What do you make of Tampa and Winston going forward?
Winston's been a very difficult guy to evaluate for me because I think there's talent there. I like the fact that he's aggressive. I like the fact that he's a turn-it-loose thrower. Certainly has had issues with poor decision-making and interceptions. Bruce Arians is very hard on quarterbacks, but yet he likes quarterbacks to be aggressive. So it seems like a good mix and a good marriage. Hard to know exactly how it will play out, but this is a team loaded with offensive weapons.
Yeah.
Now, they've got some questions at running back. No, you know, we know that, but as far as the receiving core and the tight end group, this is a team that's absolutely loaded.
Good stuff, Greg Cosell, 30-plus year NFL Films on a Thursday. Great talking to you, Greg.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Well, I just had the greatest 5-minute conversation of my life. You know, I don't think I've ever interviewed John Elway, but I grew up, his family is from around my hometown. And his parents, John Elway, has a huge, huge connection, the Elway family, to the Pacific Northwest and the coast of Washington. And I've said this before, that John Elway was the first great professional quarterback I saw live. I was at a Seahawk game in the Kingdom, and John Elway was a phenom. You didn't get college football on television much. You heard about John Elway, you know, the Yankee contract and him, Marino, but you didn't get all these college football games on. You know, ESPN wasn't running 500 college football games. Fox Sports didn't have 150 football games. And now John's had a remarkable career. In fact, Jason Whitlock has said for years, John Elway's his favorite player of all time. He was mythical because you didn't get to see all his college games. Like now you watch Trevor Lawrence, you can watch him 10 times a year at Clemson. John is now, of course, the Bronco general manager. And I'll try not to fawn over him via the Coward Global Satellite Network. You know, John, it is, first of all, it's an absolute pleasure. You went and hired Vic Fangio. Now, anybody that had a cup of coffee with Sean McVay got a job. It's an offensive league. You went with a defensive coach and an older defensive coach. Did you feel like there's risk involved? Why did you go that way?
You know, I kind of went into the process with an open mind. I wanted to try to find the best head coach out there. So I tried to go in without any pre-drawn conclusions. And obviously, everybody was going young and going offense But I just wanted to sit down and meet with them all before I came to any conclusions. And I had, every candidate I interviewed was really good. But Vic was the last one. And Vic really struck me in the fact that, you know, his attention to detail, his understanding of the defensive side of the game, of football, and his past history. And really thought that he was a perfect fit for us at the time. He's a no BS guy. He gets right to the point. But players love playing for him because the players know that he puts them in the best situation to be successful. So, you know, I had about a 5-hour interview with Vic and really figured that he was going to be the guy. I still think football is still all about blocking and catching and being disciplined and attention to detail. And Vic has all those type things and really, you know, never had an opportunity to be a head coach. And I thought with what we needed at the time, that he was a perfect fit for us, and so far it's been tremendous.
You know, John, as a general manager, very few great players in any sport have become a great general manager, because when you're a great player, maybe it is hard to forget evaluation, just to understand what it's like to be a grinder or a mediocre player. And I look at football and I think to myself, I would really struggle to evaluate receivers, but I feel pretty good I can watch a college running back and say, that guy will work at the next level. Are there positions for you, John, in evaluation that you feel strong with that are harder? Does your quarterbacking help you or hinder you on some evaluation positions?
You know, it does. I think because, as much tape, and you would think that I think that I'm better on the offensive side, having been a quarterback and played on the offensive side for so long. It does help me with assignments and knowing routes and how, with wide receivers, how wide receivers, what I liked in wide receivers. But it also helped me, I always sort of look at the defensive side of the ball and really look at corners and safeties, which a lot of times are the toughest ones. But I know what I liked going against, and I liked what I know what I didn't like going against. And I think that that helps me as an evaluator with the secondary as well as linebackers and pass rushers. And so I think my experience, but from the viewpoint of all the defensive tape that I watched, because I never watched offenses other than a review of our game, I spent all my time watching defensive players. And so therefore, I felt like sometimes I'm better looking at defensive players than I am offensive players, not necessarily running or wide receivers, but because of what I've watched my whole career. But, then again, you have your strengths and you have your weaknesses, and you rely on your scouts and you rely on the people around you that you feel like are good in different areas. And you trust them and what they see.
John, you were unique. You had the arm, you had the size, you had the intellectual pedigree, you were an athlete. You were very much, I would say, a Patrick Mahomes. Kind of you watch him play, and even a guy like me can figure it out. But if you look at the history of the NFL, Tom Brady, Joe Montana, I can go Peyton Manning wasn't very athletic. Phillip Rivers played at NC State. There's a lot of Phil Sims. In fact, I'd argue there's a lot more Phil Sims in the history of this league than there are John Elways. How much to you is arm talent? And how much of this quarterback position, John, is guts, chip on the shoulder, toughness, being able to get hit, leadership? Because you had a great arm. Does arm matter to you a ton?
I think it helps. I don't think it's an end-all. Obviously, you don't need a great arm. I think there's plenty of guys in the league that have proven that you don't need a great arm. You need the intellect. There's no question. As you said, the players that you just mentioned were all tremendous players that weren't necessarily great athletes, but they're still good. They're still good athletes to play in the NFL. So, and I will go back, and the one thing that I guess I did learn over my time playing, Colin, is the fact that to win a Super Bowl, I believe you have to win it from the pocket. And, you can get outside and make plays, run around and make some, third down, pick up some third downs and do that. But I don't think you can make that a consistent way to win football games. I think overall you have to be able to win it from the pocket. And that's why the guys that you mentioned are so great and have had so much success, because they're not necessarily getting out running around, but they're able to win it from the pocket. And I think to win championships, that's what you have to do.
John, one of the things, football is safer today, John. There's less hitting. There's fewer two-a-days. But here's what I don't like about it. I think offensive line play has deteriorated. I think it's harder to know. You get less practice with offensive lines. I think that position – so we have this asset called quarterback – and I think it's harder to get people to protect the quarterbacks. I know in Denver, you've had some hits and some misses on the offensive line. Football has changed. It's safer for the players. But do you think all the safety measures and less practice are good for the players?
I do. I think it is good for the players. And I think that with the rule changes, they're making the game safer. I think they're taking the unnecessary hits out of the game, and that's what we're trying to do, is to prevent the big hits that are not necessary. Football is always going to be a physical game, and it's always going to be, blocking and tackling. But I think with where the rules are going as far as the amount of practices. They don't beat on each other nearly as much than we used to, which, you know, helps with the health. I will also say when you're talking about the offensive line, I would also say that, you know, they're not getting trained in college as well either, because the offenses are changing in college and with the spread offenses, and they're in two-point stances. You know, the downhill running game is not there anymore in college football. So the offensive linemen are not getting trained coming out of college like they used to either. And so it just takes longer for the offensive linemen to develop once they get up to, you know, the NFL level.
Finally, John, you obviously, you have aged very well. You're running an NFL team. But you were diagnosed about 10, 12 years ago with Dupuytren construction with your hands. And, weather-related, DNA, family. I want you to talk about that a second, because you've largely been seen as somebody that is very healthy post-football. But you got diagnosed with something years ago.
I did. It was back in 2005, and it's called Dupuytren's contracture, and it's really the bending of your fingers in your hands to where it becomes, they bend more and more all the time, and at some point in time, they just continue to bend. And so I was diagnosed in 2005, and at that point in time, the only option was surgery. And after playing 16 years, and I'd had plenty of surgeries after I retired, and decided that, you know, I didn't want to have another surgery. And so it continued to get worse on me, my hands. I have it in both my hands on my ring fingers, and they just continued to contract. And then about 2 years ago, I found out that there was a non-surgical option to be able to fix the problem of Dupuytren's. And so I'm proud to be a part of this message, to be able to get it out to people and get the understanding of what Dupuytren's is about. And there are a lot of different options now, more options than there used to be. And you can go to factsonhand.com. And that explains a lot of it. But also, if you feel like this is a symptoms that you may have, to go see your hand doctor and see if it's something that they can fix.
By the way, you're in the AFC as a general manager. Have you ever texted or called Tom Brady and say, Tom, could you just retire already? It's good God, you got a trophy room. When you talk to Brady as an all-time great, what makes it click for him?
You know, I think that, and had a chance when Tom was young, when we were both younger, to play some golf with him and get a chance to know him. And I really tell you that obviously the success that Tom's had has been tremendous. But I think, you know, ultimately we see everything on the outside, the fans see what he's about. But ultimately, what makes Tom click is that heart and what's inside and the desire to win, the competitive nature that he has, the toughness, the mental toughness that he has, and to be able to play big in big games. And that's what he's done so well for so long. At 42 years old, he's still clicking along. I can't wait till he's 47. I don't know if he'll still be around, but I'm hoping to be at 47. Then we'll all have a chance.
By the way, John, I remember when you retired. I remember it. It shocked people, John. You had good football left in you. Have you ever for one second thought, I probably had two more years left? Because I remember when you retired, I was a kid, I remember thinking, John Elway retired? Do you ever look back at that and think you could have gotten two more years out of it?
You know, I guess I always look at it, especially the older you get, when you get away from the game, you miss it. And you say, you know what, maybe I could have played a couple more years. But I've just looked at the situation that I had in Denver and having coming off two world championships. My last season there, I'd kind of had some hamstring problems.
Yep.
And I cracked a rib, and so I had some health problems. What I found is I didn't heal, and so the game didn't heal very well, and so the game became harder and harder. And I just thought, yeah, sure, I could have probably played a couple more years, but I really just thought being allowed to leave the game on an all-time high with two championships was the best way to go. And if I left something on the table, I'd rather leave it on the table with something left to go and not go a couple more years and have left 1 year too late. So I want to make sure I left too early rather than too late.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I admire your career and you personally and for joining us on the Herd today. I really appreciate it. You didn't have to do this, and I thank you so much for stopping by.
Well, thank you for having us on there, Colin. I really appreciate it. It was great talking to you about the Grace Harbor up there, and nice to know I know someone else from the area.